This past week, the Hebrew University in Yerushalayim announced that it was going to award a prize, special scholarship, a financial reward, which is sponsored by the Shane family in the United States. It's a scholarship, a reward, which is given to students of an MA in sociology and anthropology, and the reward is given for research in the range of phenomena in Israeli society. It's awarded by the Faculty of Social Sciences and the Department of Sociology and Anthropology. The reward was revealed in an article in the Jerusalem Post, which was written by a writer named Stephen Plout. And I want to quote you part of what he wrote in the article and why the award was given to its recipient. "I wish I were making this up as some sort of pre-Purim joke, but it seems that the latest anti-Israel outrage coming out of the Hebrew University in Jerusalem is it's awarding a prize to a graduate student for an essay in which the student claims that Israel is abusing and oppressing Palestinians by not raping their women. Had it not been awarded a prize by a panel of the Hebrew University's most distinguished professors, the whole matter could be dismissed as just another idiotic essay by a Moonbeck grad student, not something worthy of any attention being paid to it. But according to news reports, the essay in question has now been published by the Hebrew University's Shane Center, at the enthusiastic recommendation of a Hebrew University professors' committee headed by Dr. Zali Gurevich. Gurevich runs the Shane Center, which awarded the prize. I wonder if the Shane family knew what is being done with their contributions to the university. The essay indicting Israeli soldiers for not raping Palestinian women was the product of the crayon of an MA student named Tal Nitzan. Tal is a she. Her main theme is that the lack of IDF rapes of Palestinian women is designed to serve a political purpose. Lack of IDF rapes of Palestinian women, the political purpose is that Israel fears the Palestinians demographically, and so IDF soldiers do not rape the women to avoid creating new Palestinians and little intifadas. Here is Nitzan at her finest. I quote you, "In the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, it can be seen that the lack of military rape merely strengthens the ethnic boundaries and clarifies the inter-ethnic differences, just as organized military rape would have done. Israeli racism has resulted in suppressed Jewish male sexual desire for Palestinian women. Just another manifestation of Zionist racism. Since the absence of rape of Arab women by Israeli soldiers has no parallel in any other human army in wartime any time in history, the only conclusion must be that Jewish soldiers are far more racist and intolerant than the others." Now Nitzan and her guru Gurevich, so-called professor, rule out automatically all other alternative explanations for why Israeli troops do not rape Arab women. The possibility that Israeli troops are simply civilized humans is ruled out as an imponderable. Ditto for the possibility that Jewish ethics serve to deter such abuse of Arab women. Instead, Nitzan claims that Arab women in Judea and Samaria are not raped by IDF soldiers because the women are dehumanized in the soldiers' eyes. I guess that means they are not rape-worthy. You know, unlike Shalamit Aloni, Yael Dayan, and Tamar Gazansky, how did Nitzan reach these cosmic conclusions? Well, by conducting interviews with 25 soldiers. That is what the Hebrew University has sunk to regarding 25 interviews as research comprising an MA thesis. So essentially, Nitzan is saying that the proof that Israeli soldiers are brutal, oppressive stormtroopers is in the fact that they do not mistreat and sexually abuse Palestinian women. Not even the Palestinian terrorist women apprehended after trying to murder Jews. According to her own thesis logic, if little Tal herself were to be raped by Hamas terrorists, I guess this would pretty much prove that they are egalitarian and progressive seekers of peace and justice. How do we arrive at such self-deprecating conclusions? How can we, or why do we insist on suggesting the absurd that borders on the ludicrous in the expense of being self-defeatist? Now, I know that it would be logical for us, and we all know, that everything and every answer is found in the Torah HaKdoshah. But I think that it would be ill-advised for me to suggest that responding to such a ridiculous, absurd, and really debasing article and reward which was given, to soundly suggest that the answer as to how one could pose such a so-called thesis is found in the Torah is also difficult for me to swallow. But I do think that in this week's Parsha of Va'era, there is an important message which perhaps reveals not only where we come from, but I think more importantly, the importance of where we're supposed to be headed to. Strangely enough, the Torah says in Perek Vav Pasuk Yud Gimel, as its own parsha, Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe ve'el Aaron vayetzavim al Bnei Yisrael ve'el Paro Melech Mitzrayim lehotzi et Bnei Yisrael mi'eretz Mitzrayim. Obviously, the main focus of what's going on, certainly at the beginning of the parshiot of Sefer Shemot, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is instructing Moshe and Aaron to command and demand from Paro that he release Bnei Yisrael, that he free the Jewish people from his tyranny and from his stronghold. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the Torah continues in Pasuk Yudalit, after we are given this introduction of what seems to make sense in the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim. Eile Roshei Beit Avotam Bnei Reuven Becho Yisrael Chanochu Palu Ubnei Shimon Yimuel V'Yamin. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, the Torah starts to introduce to us the lineage, the descent of the families of Bnei Yisrael. Ve'eile Shmot Bnei Levi L'Toldotam Bnei Gershon Bnei Kehat Bnei Merari. Sure enough, the Torah introduces in the following or ensuing psukim Levi and the entire family. And the Torah says, Vayikach Amram et Yocheved dodato lo liisha, Vatelet et Aaron vet Moshe, and so on and so forth. And we are to understand that the Torah here introduces the genealogy, the descent of Moshe and Aaron. After all, they're being sent to Mitzrayim to take Bnei Yisrael out. Who are they? Where do they come from? Who are their parents? But interestingly enough, why does the Torah, prior to its introduction of Levi, who is the great-grandfather of Moshe and of Aaron, why does the Torah have to introduce to us Reuven, Shimon, and then Levi? Reuven and Shimon would seem, at least contextually, to have nothing to do with the entire context of the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim at this particular time. The Ramban and many of the Meforshim are troubled by this, and the Ramban Nachmanides explains as follows, I quote you verbatim. Lo ratza hakatuv la'atchil eile shmot b'nei Levi l'toldotam shelo yir'eh shiye Levi bechor hayachas mikan ve'elech l'chvod Moshe. The Torah did not begin with Levi, but rather it started with Reuven, the rightful owner of the Bechor, of the first birthright, the eldest of all of the children. Because had it started with Levi, people might have thought, now that Moshe is assuming the role of leadership, the entire birthright is shifted and transferred over to Levi. No. Aval iskir echav agdolim mimenu. Says the Ramban, first we are introduced to the oldest, and then it's obviously logical that we introduce following Shimon, the second child, and only then are we introduced to Levi, who follows. The Ramban is making an extremely important and integral statement to our survival. The Ramban is telling us that while it is true, Moshe and Aaron, who they were, they're from Levi, nonetheless, it is so important for the Jewish people to value the archives of family descent. Because when we talk about a mission that we're going to accomplish, when we talk about moving forward for the sake of the freedom of Bnei Israel, the Jewish people first have to understand where they come from, who were and who are their ancestors. How did the story evolve? There is a story behind the present day. It is called the history. And Rashi similarly suggests a very similar idea. In Pasuk Chaf Hei, the Torah tells us, Ve'elazar ben Aharon lakach lo mibnot Putiel lo li'isha, vateled lo et Pinchas. Elazar, the son of Aharon, takes from the girls of Putiel. Who is this Putiel, says Rashi? Mizera Yitro, shepitem agalim ve'avodat elilim. He was from the children of Yitro, who destroyed the agalim, the wagons which were used, or the calves which were used for the worship of idolatry. Umizera Yosef shepitpet biYitzro, and he indeed comes from the children of Yosef, who was able to dismiss his Yetzer Hara, his evil inclination. What Rashi is telling us is that the people that we marry, our grandparents, our great-grandparents, the Jewish home has a tremendous amount of historical ramifications. And Rashi and the Ramban are telling us and suggesting that history not only has symbolic value, but has significant ramifications with regards to our survival, with regards to ensuring our future. We are to recognize that our personal and national story begins with the history that preceded it. It started somewhere, and that is the only way to ensure that we focus on where we are headed. A Jew entertains such ludicrous conjecture, such that I described in the prize which was awarded to this master's student. It means that he or she has forgotten where they come from. It is the same conjecture that is offered by the Israeli Tel Avivian who lives in Tel Aviv and who hasn't visited Yerushalayim a half an hour away in 11 years. And I meet them all the time. It is the same conjecture which is posed by a prime minister who shows willingness without any pause to forego a stronghold in what are the Jewish symbols, the Jewish essence of the Kodesh HaKadashim, the holiness, the spirituality, the value and the wealth of religiosity that Yerushalayim has to offer, that has assured our survival in the past, and that will assure our survival into the future, is the same type of person. It is someone who has forgotten who we are, and therefore has no idea where we are headed. I went to Yad Vashem with my children once, and my daughter, who at the time was 9 years old, was not allowed to go into the exhibit. She's too young, too graphic. So I went with her into the cafeteria, we sat down, I bought her a drink, and we're schmoozing. And all of a sudden she turns to me and she understands very well where she was. And she says to me, "Abba, why do the whole world insist on trying to destroy the Jewish people?" I said to her, "My dear, I do not have the answer to that question. But if you keep asking it, I assure you that the Jewish people will survive." is precisely those questions of the past that ensure our vitality into the future. And it is precisely with that focus that the Torah introduces Aharon and Moshe. It is not enough to know what your goal orient should be, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Aharon and Moshe. You have to know where you come from. There's a Reuven that preceded you. There's a Shimon that preceded you. And certainly there is a great-grandfather named Levi who made you who you are. And as they assume the mantle of leadership, this message is driven home quite clearly in the heart of Yetziat Mitzrayim and Sefer Shemot. We have that same focus in terms of appreciating, embracing and understanding our past, then we will understand and be able to appreciate how we can look forward to and anticipate the Geulah, the redemption in our near future, hopefully. B'mheira b'yameinu, amen. Shabbat Shalom.